Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Tiziana Deering, who is a professor of social work at Boston College and the former head of Catholic Charities for the Archdiocese of Boston, an anti-poverty activist and advocate for social justice. She is the co-editor of Managing for Social Impact, Innovations in Responsible Enterprise. Welcome to Background Briefing, Tiziana Deering.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you, Tiziana. What do you make of the somewhat awkward meeting that took place in the Vatican between Donald Trump and Pope Francis? And, of course, Donald Trump, his wife and daughter were also in attendance. The pictures were of a pretty solemn-looking Pope, but I take it that things improved in the course of, what, this half-hour meeting?
You know, it does seem that it did. And one of the things that I found myself thinking, looking at the now already iconic picture of a sour-looking Pope Francis next to the Trump family, is these are both men who are acutely aware of their social media presence. Pope Francis is our first tweeting pope. He made some decisions very early in his papacy to have pictures taken of some stunning visual images, including washing the feet of the marginalized and poor. These are both people who are aware that they're being photographed and know how those photographs are used. So one can't be sure that the pope's dour look was on purpose, but one certainly shouldn't think that he's not aware of what he looks like when these pictures are happening.
Well, it was almost, Donald Trump was almost like a schoolboy. On the way out, he promised to read everything that the Pope had handed him, including, of course, the encyclical on the danger to the planet from global warming, which Donald Trump is doing everything in his power to thwart even the moderate and somewhat timid efforts so far to deal with this global impending crisis.
Yes. Yeah, well, and you know, one of the things that strikes me about this and that encyclical, which is called Laudato Si, or Our Common Home, is really quite a radical treatise on not only the environment, but the roles of technology and the free market economy in destroying the environment, especially for the poor and the marginalized. But one of the things that strikes me is we have seen a pattern with both now President and then just Donald Trump of really being quite starstruck when he meets famous and important people and they acknowledge him and he spends time with him, with them. We've seen that everything from, you know, his early tweets and excitement about Robert Kraft and Tom Brady of the New England Patriots, the famous football team, to any of a number of other important figures. And it did seem like the president was kind of starstruck in being in the presence of Pope Francis.
So what do you think of the chances, though, of any kind of lasting impact? Because as much as he is starstruck, he's also ephemeral and fickle, and he's capable of saying one thing on one day and the next day saying the exact opposite with equal conviction. So do you think there is a way that the Pope can make an impact on particularly on his Trump's assault on the environment? Or do you think that he's so preoccupied with the Russian situation that he's actually in effect sort of outsourced everything to the House and Senate, and they're the ones that are really doing the evil deeds?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. One of the things that we've seen with this president is that he seems to be profoundly influenced by the last person he was with. So right now, he's influenced by whatever the Pope's exhortations around immigration and the environment and peacemaking that he made behind closed doors. But President Trump will come back to the United States, and we've already seen such a remarkable difference between foreign policy overseas President Trump and domestic policy in the White House President Trump, that I'm not sure he gives us any good reason to believe that there's a lot of sticking power to the Pope's messages once he is back in the White House under siege and dealing on domestic policy again. And there's no reason to believe that President Trump doesn't see climate change in his lens as a domestic policy issue, not a global issue the way the Pope himself has expressed that he sees it.
But at the end of their meeting, apparently, the Pope, in a very avuncular way, took the president's wife, Melania, aside and basically said, "What are you feeding him?" In other words, he could do with a little slimming of the waistline, you know, cut back on the Big Macs and the sponge cake. What did you make of that?
Well, you know, one of the things that the Pope is a priest, and one of the first things that priests are trained to be is pastoral, ministers to families. And what I really saw, and maybe this is the Catholic in me, but what I really saw in that moment was the Pope shifting from his role as a head of state to being a pastoral human being, engaging the family, making them feel welcome, finding common ground there. In addition, I think he was just plain quite charmed by the First Lady, who, by any count, is an absolutely beautiful woman, and whose culture he has some familiarity with.
Explain further. I mean, she's Slovenian, right?
She's Slovenian, and apparently he knows the Slovenian dessert, and he has, in my understanding, always been very careful to learn a little bit more about the culture and background of the people that he's going to be meeting with. I would not be at all surprised if he had gone out of his way to understand her background a little bit. But again, I think my main point here is, and this comes back, Ian, to your question as well about what are the chances that anything that the Pope said to the president will stick. It is my guess that the president has rarely come into encounter with a powerful leader who is also a deep and profound pastor. And so no one can look into his heart and know if sort of a moment of conversion, and I don't mean Roman Catholic conversion, I just sort of mean spiritual awakening, is there or is going to happen. But I'd be willing to bet that he has not often come across a man of power who is so deeply a pastoral person who can engage with you at a very human and soul-based level. And my guess is that that really was quite striking for the president and something unlike what he's experienced before.
But the only person in that meeting, of course, that's had a conversion, a religious conversion, is the daughter Ivanka, who converted to Judaism when she married Jared Kushner. She's also supposedly a big advocate of doing something about climate change. She apparently used to date Leonardo DiCaprio, who she got into the Trump Tower during the transition period. And so, by the way, it did Al Gore. One wonders what kind of impact they had. Now, of course, we have to add to that list of lobbyists for the planet, this lifeboat Earth that we're all in, that the Trump administration is drilling holes through this lifeboat Earth, and we could all sink under. I mean, the latest stuff from the Antarctic is so shocking. The huge chunks of ice are going to be breaking off, and sea level may rise much, much quicker than people have even projected. So any thoughts there in terms of Ivanka's role and some teaming up with the Pope?
Well, you know, so it is an interesting question, because one of the few people that we do know does have consistent and profound influence on President Trump is his daughter. That she has, in fact, been both a moderating influence and has been able, at least at some point. Now, there are reports out there have been other times when she has failed to sway him away from a particular choice or behavior. But she has kept his attention on issues that are important to her as much as anyone can. If she had any kind of a profound moment there at the Vatican, if she was influenced even further by, for example, the Pope's writings on climate change, she could, in fact, be a more effective ally pretty much than anybody else who was on the team or in the room, because we do know she's somebody he really does listen to and trust. And, you know, as you point out, once again, the president may be treating climate change as a domestic policy issue, but it is a profound species-level issue, and one that has implications not only for livability of the planet, but also for the disproportionate impact that climate change will have on the people the Pope cares about most, who are the marginalized, the vulnerable, those who are already hurting in the streets. And everything we know about climate change is that it disproportionately impacts those vulnerable populations.
So the exchange of gifts, of course, involved the Pope giving President Trump an olive tree statue, and he said he hopes that this olive tree, the hope you may be this olive tree to make peace. Trump responded, "We can use peace." What's your sense of, it seems that, again, going back to him being led by the nose by whoever he last spoke to, it does seem that this idea of the ultimate Gordian knot, Middle East peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, is predicated upon actually going to war almost with Iran. So I'm very confused about what exactly the achievement is here. But as you know, the Pope has been a leading advocate and he's intervened personally in lots of efforts to make peace and to end, for example, the 60-plus year-long deep freeze between the United States and Cuba. He had a very active role in brokering that deal. So any sense of whether there was any discussions about the Middle East peace?
It would be surprising to me if there were not. If one followed closely the president's trip to Saudi Arabia, the conversations he had in public there, and then his engagements in Israel, both the conversations that he had where he, you know, visibly tied relationship with Iran and Saudi Arabia's concerns and interests there with the peace process, as well as his sort of regular encouragement that it's time for Middle East peace to happen, he is clearly not only professing an interest in being a part of the solution there, but has consistently suggested as the world's sort of greatest deal maker in his mind, he may be uniquely positioned to help broker something. So given that posture and given his public statements, given the fact that those were the countries he chose to visit first, it's impossible for me to imagine, oh, that's overstatement, but it's hard for me to imagine, also given that we know the Pope chose to emphasize peacemaking even in his gifts, how did that not come up? How would that not been a part of what they discussed? And it's tempting at least to assume that when the president said to the Pope afterward, I won't forget what you said, that the peace message seems to have resonated for him in particular.
So what's your sense, though, of where Catholics are in this country? By and large, they voted for the Democrats, but conservative Catholics certainly supported Trump. Obviously, there have been some extremely conservative bishops in this country and cardinals who have been somewhat marginalized by the Pope, or in the case of Archbishop Cardinal Dolan, he said he's getting a tune-up, changing his outlook. And, of course, he sat between, as you probably recall, at the Al Smith dinner between Trump and Hillary Clinton, where Trump actually made something of a fool of himself. But my sense is that this stark guns and butter issue that Trump has brought to the fore, where he's basically eviscerating all programs for the poor in order to give tax cuts to the rich and transferring money from the environment and from diplomacy into more money for the Pentagon, to the extent that the additional amount of money for the Pentagon is the equivalent of the entire annual budget of the Russians for their military. So it's just somewhat obscene in terms of the old guns and butter paradigm. You know, you're just pouring money at more and more guns that you don't need and starving those in need of butter.
Yeah, the president's budget is a breathtaking abandonment of the most vulnerable and marginalized, as well as of any portion of the social contract that is social care between the state and its citizens. We understand from a negotiating standpoint the claims that this is an anchoring budget, meaning you pull them far out so that the realm of negotiations has moved further in your direction. I understand all of that, but it is an abandonment of that whole component of our social contract and a squashing of the needs of our most vulnerable. And it's really hard to interpret that budget document any other way. You know, there are 70 million Catholics, roughly, in the United States, and they are not a monolithic voting bloc. There are conservative Catholics who believe that the right to life is the fundamental Catholic voting issue, who are encouraged by this president and his view on abortion and choice. There are also liberal Catholics who feel very strongly that this president doesn't represent the Catholic social justice teaching principles that this pope is particularly known for standing for. The Catholic Democrats, for example, put out an open letter to the president over the weekend, you know, sort of exhorting him to listen to the Pope's calls on not only climate change, but immigrants and health care and poverty, et cetera. So, you know, the Catholic vote is not monolithic on this, but it represents the spectrum of all the different ways that the Church teaches Catholics to care about the life of the human being, which is important and full of dignity, full of God-given dignity. So the president is certainly not in alignment with the full range of what the Pope represents on that, or what the sort of diaspora of Catholics in the United States represent.
Well, but that's to the credit of Catholics, is they've at least had consistency on the life issues, because they equally oppose abortion and capital punishment, which is not the case for evangelicals.
That's right. And in my opinion, the really visionary Catholics then bring in questions of poverty, immigration, health care, social justice across social welfare as another aspect of human dignity and the importance of the human person. And, you know, we see a lot of conversation about that out in Catholic communities now, and this Pope has been particularly strong in recalling that social justice call of the Church that really came forward in 150 years of teaching around social welfare and work and the social contract, et cetera, that had fallen, you know, arguably to some extent by the wayside in the Catholic dialogue in the United States.
Well, Tiziana Dehring, I thank you very much for joining us, and I appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation.
And again, I've been speaking with Tiziana Dehring, who's a professor of social work at Boston College and the former head of Catholic Charities for the Archdiocese of Boston, an anti-poverty activist and advocate for social justice. She's the co-editor of Managing for Social Impact, Innovations in Responsible Enterprise. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.